Welcome to Music Journeys. I'm Mike Foley. On this edition of the show, we feature Victoria Canal, the Spanish-American, London-based singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. She does it all, shares the inspiration behind her debut full-length release, Slowly It Dawns. The collection of songs as a whole represent her thoughts on the unraveling of life as we age, combined with those moments along the journey where we experience a sense of resolve and self-forgiveness. Here on Music Journeys, Victoria reflects on how the love of music began and how she's overcoming the labels often associated with having a limb difference. Victoria's talents impressed Coldplay's Chris Martin so much that he helped sign her to the band's Parlophone Records in 2021. She'll tell us about that and the experience of performing with Coldplay at the 2024 Glastonbury Festival as well. Victoria Canal, our featured guest on this edition of Music Journeys. Thanks for listening.
My name is Victoria Canal, and this is my music journey.
June Baby opens Victoria Canal's debut full-length release, Slowly It Dawns. Canal's love of music began courtesy of her grandmother, who led a church choir in North Georgia.
Every summer we would visit her, and I would sit with her at the piano as she led the choir. I just loved the way that music moved people. And seeing it through her, I would sit on her lap and play along and sort of sing in harmony instinctively. And she saw that I had a talent for music, so she encouraged my parents to put me in lessons and kind of went from there. My family moved around a whole bunch growing up. I was born in Germany and we lived in Shanghai and Tokyo and Dubai and all these different places because of my dad's work. And I guess I really just loved the universality of music and the way that it reaches everyone. It's such a source of joy and unity and connection no matter where you are in the world. There's so much of it to explore and savor. And yeah, it just was a very life-giving source from a very young age for me.
Little girl, why don't you answer me? Do you cry? Well, right now you're standing next to me, and that means you're alright. Little girl, what are you doing here? It's not a place for you to play. I've seen people die here. I've seen the clouds rain every day.
I have a specific memory of being 4 years old and sort of doodling in my journal, and I doodled myself with my arms up, including my little arm like this, in front of like thousands of people and singing. And it was just like a vision that I had, and it just felt like my purpose from when I first became aware that it was a thing that I could do. So everything in my life has been in service of that. Like, I've never had a plan B. I've never wanted to do anything else. I designed my life around music and would plan out all the things I wanted to achieve every year and booking gigs and trying to get interviews and posting videos online and making my Facebook page and all that kind of stuff. I just was so eager, so driven to make it in music.
I would love to reach the point where I take care of me. You can take a heart and break it, spend it at the beach. I would know exactly what to do.
I had a teacher in eighth grade, Matthew Langridge is his name, and he was the first one to say, you can do this for a living. Here's how you book a gig. Here's how you build a profile. If you want to do this, I can show you. He was my first co-write. He showed me how to use Logic Pro. He like kind of single-handedly proved to me that it might be possible and that I myself had the potential to do that. He really believed in me, and I had had my family believe in me. I've been really lucky that my parents have always supported my pursuits artistically, but to have someone like him really say, you can make it, you know, that changed my life. I could concisely describe Slowly at Dawn's, it would be the process of life unraveling as you get older and starting with the naivete, moving through a huge identity crisis and arriving at some sense of resolve and self-forgiveness. That journey is quite cyclical, I think, and maybe happens more than once in a lifetime. And it's like my most intense consolidation of all the things that I've been thinking and feeling as I get further into my life. There's a title that has the F word in it. So, well, I'll just call it Totally Fine.
Fine. Digging around in your frenemy's past, you're sharing their business when nobody asked. What is the deal? What hole would you fill if everyone stopped in their tracks and paid attention to you? You got your smile and your affluent friends, high school reunion, everyone's so impressed. You've conjured a jury of agreeable ones. Anyone to tell you you're the best? You're so much fun. Feels like shredded glass down my throat.
It's probably a personal favorite for me because I wrote it when I had strep throat and I actually couldn't sing. So my experiment was, can I write a song start to finish, lyrics, melody, harmony, everything, without knowing what I would sound like singing it? And it was very much like a flow, just a spilling of words and ideas. And then the recording that sits on the album is the first time I played it. And it really, for me, explores the idea of how much tension there is sometimes in being a public-facing person or publishing things or being loud in any way, taking up space. Sometimes there's such a relief and peace in laying back and surrendering to just being a witness to the beauty of the world, you know, and you don't always have to be the creator. Sometimes you can really just be a witness. And yeah, that song speaks to that for me. It's probably my personal favorite and the thing that I feel all the time. It's like a constant tension of the exhaustion of putting myself out there constantly.
Be my
The biggest thing I've learned is that by signing up for a life in the arts, you are basically taking on uncertainty, always. Like, you can never guarantee how something will turn out. And the more comfortable you can get with that, the more you can embrace the fact of uncertainty, constant uncertainty, when you are an artist and a human being. I think it helps, you know? I've talked to loads of more successful artists about this, and the one thing that we can all agree on is success isn't linear, and nothing in life is just, okay, it gets better with time, and once you're successful, you're just successful to the end. Every successful artist has a bad gig once in a while, or has a song that doesn't go over well, or has a moment of disappointment, and understanding that it's not just you that's going through it is so helpful. And I think for me, I feel more confident making art and being an artist when I see other people being fully themselves and just going for it and feeling the fear and doing it anyway. I remember when I was 14, I was playing a covers gig at a restaurant and no one was listening, and my dad was there, my parents were there, and he saw that I was sort of like, I sort of had an attitude while I was playing and not really talking between songs and just kind of didn't want to be there because no one was listening. And it's like kind of the maddest he's ever gotten at me. And he said afterwards, he was like, "Don't you dare play as if the people who are there don't matter. Everybody that is there matters and is taking out time to be there and to spend time on you, you know, and that is a responsibility. So even if it is two people, like, you have to give it your best show. You play like there's 1,000 people there." I really love this song called Vauxhall. Vauxhall is a car brand in the UK, and I've been living in the UK for a few years, and I was dating this guy who drove us around in his Vauxhall on tour, and we sort of fantasized about moving to the suburbs and leaving it all behind, the lugging of the, you know, of all our gear and, you know, playing to very few people, all this like pursuit of greatness and excellence. We were like, what if we just leave it behind and get normal jobs and move out to the suburbs and have kids? And that song really speaks to like this yearning that I have to be more normal and to be able to have a normal life. But the fact that even if I did choose that, I would still feel this like itch of chase, having to chase this life in music, even if sometimes I hate it, you know, like I still choose it. So yeah, I like that song because it feels especially sort of apt for me in certain moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
What makes the chase worth it?
That's a great question. What makes the chase worth it? I think honestly, when I'm connected with other people, the most connected you can be through the music, like a good show, and also in the studio when I'm in a flow and I'm making something that out of thin air with people that I love around me, that's what makes it worth it, is the pure euphoria of creation, being the creator of something that is yours alone. Feels really, really powerful, and then getting to share that. And I also just think this life takes me a lot of different places, and it's a lot of different adventures that I couldn't possibly have anticipated. And I think the unpredictability is also what makes it worth it, because there are moments I could never even have dreamed of. In college, I made a Rolling Stone poster for April Fool's Day that said, "Victoria Canal wows Chris Martin at a clown's birthday party and goes on tour with Coldplay forever and ever and features on every single album." And that got resent to me on one of those like time capsule apps a couple years later, and I reposted it being like, this is ridiculous and so stupid. And then lo and behold, someone that works with him had been following me for a while and watching my videos and basically said, okay, I guess I'll make Victoria's Day by sending Chris one of her videos. And he responded right away and said, oh my gosh, who is that? We got to get in touch and help her, see how what she wants to do, how we can help. And he FaceTimed me. And he asked me if I wanted to be signed to Parlophone, which is Coldplay's label. Yeah, and it's just been a whirlwind since. Like, he's been such an incredible mentor and friend, and then inviting me to play Glastonbury with Coldplay was just, like, unforgettable. It's just one of the best moments of my life. The main thing I've learned from being around Chris is that it is possible to be successful and kind at the same time. Like, you don't have to be a jerk to make it big. You actually have more responsibility to make people feel seen and heard as you rise. And seeing the way that he manages his team and the way he treats his crowd and just his overall energy towards others is so kind and so generous. There's no reason he has to be that way when in this industry there are so many people that aren't once they get to that level. So I'm really inspired just seeing his motivation to be kind and generous with people. How can I exist when she's right there in front of me? Every time I've done something right, she is right there one up in me. So pathetic, what's the use? As hard as I try, I'm not you. Yeah, How Can I Be a Person actually is another favorite of mine off the album. It is about a very specific artist that I compare myself to a lot, who always seems to be a few steps ahead of me. And I decided to write a confessional song about comparison, which is sort of my Achilles heel of my life. I'm never gonna say who it is, but people who are into the lore can probably figure it out. Black swan that I am, I'm sick of the day. Black Swan I wrote with genius mastermind mad scientist Egg White. That is his name, Egg White, and he lives in London, and he wrote a lot of the Adele material and like a lot of the, he worked with Amy Winehouse and just has a long roster of amazing artists that he's worked with. He's a classically trained musician and knows all the chords under the sun and has a really good ear. And I had brought him and our other friend Johnny Latimer just these chords that was like the major 3-4-1. That was like the verse of the melody that I had, or the melody of the verse. And then he sat down and played it on piano with that pattern, and it just sounded so cool. And we just kind of grew it from there, and that is probably one of my favorite songs ever to sing because it's so harmonically interesting to me and really is like touches my wounded soul, like my tortured artist heart. Yeah, Swan Song closes out the album. I wrote Swan Song over COVID when I moved back in with my parents, and I found out that one of my close loved ones had a fatal illness, and prompted a lot of conversations about grief and loss in life and what really matters. And it struck me that I think what really matters is forgiveness, because it's the hardest thing to do towards others, and it's even harder to do towards yourself. So I was listening to this podcast at the time, and it was talking about the 4 things to say to those you love before you die. It's thank you, I love you, I forgive you, and can you forgive me? So I wrote the song about that.
If I were you, I would pass by your brush. Neither of you could ever throw a fight. But son, I am asking you to try to make amends before you die.
It's really interesting being a person with a limb difference in the world, because it's quite symbolic of the way that we label each other and ourselves and sort of box ourselves and each other in to things sort of one-dimensionally. And for a long time, less so recently, but for a long time, it felt like I was just called the one-armed singer, the one-armed piano player. But it's just so wacky to me that we decide to hyperfixate on one thing about each other, but I'm also coming to terms with it. You know, like if I think about some of my favorite artists, there are certain identifiers that are aligned with that artist. Like Chapel Roan has red curly hair and dresses in drag, you know. Charlie XCX has the green brat thing and wears white tank tops or whatever. And it's just, I think the main thing that's frustrating for me is that I can't seem to choose what my identifier is because it's been chosen for me, whereas other artists seem to like decide, okay, I'm going to wear this kind of outfit or speak this kind of or whatever, and that becomes their identifier and it's a choice, you know? So that's the main thing is just sometimes I feel like it's blanketed onto me and it gets tiring to be so aware of your body all the time. But again, it is my choice and I signed up for this life and I take responsibility for that. If I really didn't want to be seen, then I wouldn't put music out. And I think my challenge is how can I be boldly seen as I am with one arm and everything and not hide because of my fear that people will only ever see me as that.
Don't leave it to me because as you can see, I just lost what I found.
I feel like my brain is pretty tangled and loud at all times, and music is the one time that it's not. And it just feels great to have that peace, you know? There are a couple of things that do that for me. One is going to the spa, one is sleeping, and one is music. I love the fact that my brain feels the way that it does when I play music. That's really the main reason I love it. And it's just so nice to let out feelings that sit in your body and create all this tension. You just want to like excavate those, you know, and purge. And music feels like that for me.
Well, Victoria Canal, thank you for spending so much time with us here on Music Journeys. And thank you for enriching our lives with your music.
Thank you so much.
Victoria Canal has several upcoming tour dates. Visit victoriacanal.com. We'll also put some links in the notes section of this episode available in WCBE's podcast experience at wcbe.org. Just search for Music Journeys. And special thanks to Simon Pokrant for some editing help in this episode. I'm Mike Foley. Talk to you again on the next Music Journey.